Radio presents Accessible Cinema, a program about media accessibility, sponsored by SubT Access, subtitling and audio description services for cinema, television, theatre performances and other live events. Accessible Cinema.
Welcome to Fred Accessible Cinema, Fred's program on media accessibility and inclusion to inform you about the status of accessibility in the media industry. This new episode is dedicated to the 8th Media for All International Conference, entitled Complex Understandings, and that took place at the main campus of Stockholm University from the 17th to the 19th of June 2019. This conference was about creating and mediating understanding in an increasingly complex mediascape. And speaking of complexity, in our previous episode of Accessible Cinema, we defined and looked at media accessibility from different angles. For the few of you who missed it, you can find it on Fred's website or on MAP's website, mapaccess.org, the first collaborative online platform gathering information on the history and the state of the art of research, policies, training, practices, and conferences, of course, in the field of media accessibility. And speaking of conferences, as I said, in this episode, we will tackle some of the key themes explored at the 8th Media for All International Conference. We will start, of course, with the organizer, Jan Pedersen, to know more about the main themes of the conference. Then we will have the two keynote speakers, Agnieszka Sarkowska and Jan-Louis Kruger. Finally, we will hear from Anna Matamala, interviewed by Annalisa Sandrelli, who presented at the conference the European project called Easy Access for Social Inclusion Training. There is a lot to take in, so stay with us to know more about the 8th Media for All International Conference.
Fred Film Radio.
Accessible Cinema.
Welcome back to Fred Accessible Cinema. This new episode is dedicated to the 8th Media for All International Conference. And let's start then with our first guest. We are going to listen to an excerpt from an interview with the organizer of the 8th Media for All International Conference, Jan Pedersen, Associate Professor in Translation Studies, Director of the Institute for Interpreting and Translation Studies, and Deputy Head of the Department of Swedish Language and Multilingualism at Stockholm University. Just let me remind you that this, but also our next interviews, are available on Fred's website.
Fred Film Radio.
Jan, I'm sure that most of our listeners know you as a prominent academic. You're among the most cited authors in the field. I'm thinking of your book, Subtitling Norms for Television, but also one of your more recent papers, The FAR Model, Assessing Quality in Interlingual Subtitling. But you're also a professional subtitler. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, well, I don't subtitle very much anymore. I just do a program or two a year just to keep up the skill. But I used to work full-time as an interlingual subtitler. And I also did some subtitling for the deaf and hard of hearing, but mainly interlingual subtitling between languages. And I worked mainly for television and did TV series.
Well, having such knowledge, I imagine, helps a lot in research.
It does.
Do you think that we still have a kind of gap between media accessibility professionals and academics? What do you think?
Yes, we do. We certainly do. I think we are aware of it now, and I think a lot of us are working hard to close that gap.
Mm-hmm.
We try to include practitioners and also user groups as much as possible to conferences such as Media for All and also in other contexts. I think it's very important to get as many perspectives as possible. And I think it's also important that we reach out with us as researchers, that we reach out with our findings to the practicing to practitioners and to the community at large, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of the Media for All conference, how did that conference try to bridge this gap in your opinion?
Mm. We kept the above all, I think that the main thing that we did was to keep the fees very low, particularly for practitioners. Because if you work as a freelancer, there isn't I mean, some of the conferences are forbiddingly expensive. And I think there's a genuine interest among subtitlers and audio describers and so on to actually go and learn more about their trade and more about the research behind the trade. So there is genuine interest. So we try to get as many in as possible. And that's also why we reached out to organizations that gather, like AVTE, for instance, and various national organizations which have that have many practitioners as members, and offering them to become supporting organizations and also get a cheaper fee and also to get the word out to subtitles and audio describers and other practitioners so that they could in fact come.
Well, conferences in general are a great opportunity to network, so for practitioners as well. Well, I think that the title itself, Complex Understandings, was, I think, revealing somehow of what the conference wanted to achieve and did achieve, that is, creating and mediating understanding in an increasingly complex mediascape.
Yes.
Jan, what are these complex understandings that we find in the title? I mean, why is the mediascape becoming more and more complex, and how did the conference manage to represent this complexity?
Well, there are more and more groups of people and different perspectives getting involved. I mean, we have not just consumers of ABT and producers of ABT, we now have prosumers, people that not only watch audiovisual material but also produce their own, and also use their own translations and accessibility services. So we have, you know, like fan subbers and fan dubbers, and also people producing their own material. So there are many more players now, and also we see much more legislation and many more people getting their rights as audiovisual citizens, like people with various disabilities getting their just rights and they're raising demands that we earlier didn't think a lot about. So it's getting more complex about that. And I think that we wanted to create understanding between these groups. I think that was very important, that we understood the various needs of the professionals and of the users and of the producers and also from the networks and so on. Understanding between these groups, but also understanding of the many processes involved.
Mm-hmm.
So that we... Which I think that us as academics can throw a lot of light on how things work, I mean, with cognitive research and so on. And also understanding for the various needs from various groups. I mean, it's not just users that have needs, but professionals have needs as well.
Yeah,
and companies.
Of course.
So I think it's important to create understanding between these various groups.
Yeah, well, the group of users is definitely becoming more and more complex. Yes, as you said, it's true that we have visually, orally, cognitively impaired, but we have also language learners, the elderly, children, speakers of minority languages, and so on. And we definitely saw this complexity at the Media for All conference. I remember that there were presentations focusing on consumers' needs and users' desires, with viewer-centered studies using ever more complex methods. How are users' needs shaping media accessibility research and practice, in your opinion?
Well, we need to, I mean, there's a societal pressure to actually do something about their needs now. I mean, we're getting legislation in that forces the industry to do more for these groups. And also, their needs are changing. For instance, as populations grow older, there are more that are in need of subtitling for the hard of hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And there are fewer, I would say, sign language people out there, and more people are turning to speech to text reporting and that sort of thing. So the needs are changing, and the needs are taken more serious now than ever before, I think. In order for them to get the best possible service, we as researchers need to investigate what their needs actually are. I mean, we can just ask them what their needs are, but we need to look into the processes, the cognitive processes, and what to highlight and what to focus on, and so on. So we need experimental research to to see what is actually important and what is not so important, because people may not actually know. So, yeah, so we need to do that.
So we should include anyone, so all types of users.
So and many of the users of SDH, for instance, most users of SDH don't have a hearing impairment.
Yeah, that's true.
Impairment. So we need to look at accessibility service from a broader perspective as well. So it's not just for the poor disabled. It's basically a help for everyone. So we need to make it more inclusive.
We have just listened to an excerpt from an interview with the organizer of the 8th Media for All International Conference, Jan Pedersen, who told us more about the complexities for audiovisual translation and media accessibility. In this sense, as Jan said in the interview, the title of the conference, Complex Understandings, was revealing of what the conference wanted to achieve. That is, creating understanding not only of audiovisual content, but also understanding of and between producers, consumers, and prosumers. These are some of the hot topics in media accessibility. If you want to know more about this, stay with us. We will be back soon.
Fred. Hello and welcome to Fred Film Radio. I'm Amani Mohammed.
Fred Film Radio, sono Paolo De Marchi.
簡単にその先生の作品のあの紹介を。
Fred Film Radio, Sundana Night.
Clémence Ferry-Latour for Fred Film Radio, en direct du Festival de Cannes.
Fred, the festival experience in 23 languages.
This is Accessible Cinema. We are getting to know more about the 8th Media for All International Conference. As our previous guest, Jan Pedersen, said, at the conference, we saw that the gap between media accessibility professionals and academics is not so wide as it once was. The conference included a roundtable with a mix of academics and professionals, chaired by our next guest, Agnieszka Sarkowska, Associate Professor in the Institute of Applied Linguistics, University of Warsaw, and head of the AVT Lab, one of the first research groups on audiovisual translation. So, to know more about this roundtable, let's listen to an excerpt from an interview with Agnieszka, one of the two keynote speakers at the conference.
Fred Film Radio.
Agnieszka, you are a certified translator, a researcher, you are an academic teacher, but also a translator trainer and a media accessibility consultant. You have participated in many research projects over the years, including eye tracking studies, audio description, subtitling for the deaf and hard of hearing, re-speaking. So, Agnieszka, how has the media accessibility field changed in the last 5-10 years? I mean, I know it's impossible to cover everything, but, you know, what are the, let's say, 3 major transformations, in your opinion?
Yes, that's a very good question and a complex one as well. Let me see. I think the first major or an important, a really important change that we've seen in media accessibility is what I would call user empowerment. Mm-hmm. When I was beginning my journey into media accessibility, what we were seeing was that users, blind people, deaf people, hard of hearing people, were very happy to have any access services that were thrown at them. Well, here in Poland at least, in other countries, accessibility perhaps has had a longer history. So when we were organizing screenings, let's say with audio description, and we were testing different solutions, we had problems with people criticizing us, with getting critical feedback, because everybody was happy to actually have some audio description there in the first place. Now I've seen that this has changed. Blind and partially sighted people have their own favorite voice talents now. They have seen a number of audio described films before, so they know what they like. They can even pinpoint what they consider errors. So all those things, you know, they have. We have made them experts in accessibility, and I see that as empowerment. And the same with deaf and hard of hearing people. people, I think they are even more vocal in demanding good quality captions or subtitles, particularly in recent years or even this year. There has been this movement marked on Twitter with the hashtag "No More Craptions." I don't know if you've if you've seen that, and people are more and more aware of the quality, and they demand good quality. I've seen that recently a number of organizations, including the National Association of the Deaf, have issued a petition to demand the improvement in the quality of live captioning in the US, and they're petitioning the FCC to introduce some quality measures. So they are becoming advocates for their own rights.
And more aware, maybe.
Yes, that's right. They are becoming more and more aware. So I think that's an important change. Another change, I would say, that has helped to push forward media accessibility, at least in Europe, has been the introduction of legislation. I think, well, particularly in the EU context, in the Polish context, we have seen that the obligatory quotas have resulted in an increase of media access services, particularly on television. And along with these, the rise of media access services, we have also seen the rise of different quality measures, particularly in the context of live subtitling or subtitling in general, not so much, I think, in audio description. So that's 2 points, right? You've asked about three.
Yes.
I think the technological changes that we are seeing generally in audiovisual translation, not only in media accessibility, so the industry is in a state of flux, you could say. If you look at, let's say, the field of live subtitling in the US, a lot of live subtitling or captioning, as they say in the US, has been done by stenographers who have been charging high rates for the services. They need to be educated for a long time. They're professionals that deliver good quality captioning, but there is such a great demand for captioning that there are not enough people to do that. And with the rise of speech recognition technologies and re-speaking, there's other people entering the market, so there's this tension also between stenographers and re-speakers or live captioners using speech recognition, and there's money issues there as well, and also a question of training. So we're seeing I think changes in terms of the provision of access services as well. And I've just been made aware of the existence of the what is known as Global Alliance of Speech-to-Text Captioning, which is a non-profit or, corporation that aims to, you know, introduce speech-to-text captioning to, well, everywhere, basically, they say. So universal accessibility to the spoken word via all forms of captioning. So a great development of media accessibility, I would say, in recent years we have seen.
Yeah, and, well, you mentioned professionals. And I also think that maybe the gap between media accessibility professionals and academics is maybe closing, or it's not so wide as it once was. I think we can see this, I think, at international conferences on media accessibility. For example, at the Media Forum conference, you chaired a roundtable on AVT localization with media accessibility professionals and academics. And I remember you discussed, among many other things, how to mark multilingualism in subtitles for the deaf and hard of hearing, the quality of subtitles, the new language learning with Netflix software. These were among the hot topics you discussed. So, Agnieszka, what did stand out from the roundtable and from, you know, this combination between academics and professionals?
Yes, we had quite an interesting mix of people there, mostly professionals, I would say. But I think that the hottest topic and the issue that everybody was talking about after we finished the roundtable was the role of machine translation in the audiovisual translation industry now. And this is quite controversial, as we all know. On the one hand, we have this new development that so many people are expecting to work miraculously, to work wonders, and so much investment has been done. And I think we have to admit, all of us, that from time to time we do use machine translation ourselves.
Yeah, of course.
Right. But at the same time, the question is it good enough to be used for audiovisual translation? And I think what most people were saying is that it's not good enough yet, and that there's this threat of translation, audiovisual translation, being a very creative job. And I think it was one of the participants in the comment who said that while translation is such a nice and creative thing to do, while post-editing of machine translation output is a torture. Audiovisual translators are really afraid of those new developments, and I think they have a point, because what they've seen, apart from the drop in the rates, is the change in what they are expected to do. From being creative, some people would say artists or professionals, to simply some sort of editors, and they're not very happy about that.
Well, speaking of hot topics, you will organize the upcoming International Conference on Audiovisual Translation Intermedia, which will be held in Warsaw on the 19th and 20th of September 2019. Agnieszka, tell us more about this conference and also about the workshops on the 18th of September.
That's right. So Intermedia Conference is an interesting concept, I think, because it's a conference that travels around Poland. It is organized by the Intermedia Research Group, and apart from myself from the University of Warsaw, there's Łukasz Bogucki, who was instrumental in establishing the whole thing, from the University of Łódź, where the first two Intermedia conferences took place. There's also Anna Jankowska from the Jagiellonian University in Kraków, who's been involved in the organization of this conference as well, and we also had one edition in Krakow, and also we have two members in Poznań at Adam Mickiewicz University, Ivana Mazur and Agnieszka Chmiel. They organized the previous edition in 2017. So the next Intermedia conference will probably be again in 2021. I'm not going to say where it's going to be located. Let's keep this as a surprise at the end of the conference. So this year, and for the first time, it is in Warsaw, and we're going to have two exciting days of different topics, really. We have a wide range of topics, starting from the history of audiovisual translation up to very recent developments, the research with eye tracking, the use of technology, 3D, all sorts of things, and I think also the use of CAT and possibly machine translation will be discussed as well. And there will be a mix of academics, companies, professionals, students, so the usual crowd, some of the usual names, but also we have a number of new young researchers entering, and I'm very happy to see them too. And before the conference, as we As usual, we organize pre-conference workshops, and this year we're going to have workshops on interlingual life, subtitling with re-speaking, and introduction to cloud subtitling, doing eye tracking research in audiovisual translation, and we also have workshops for professional subtitlers who would like to speed up their workflow, making the most of their subtitling software, as well as because we are in Poland, we also have a workshop on translating films for voiceover.
Mm-hmm.
So and apart
things.
From these workshops that are strictly related to the Intermedia conference as such, we also have on Wednesday, the 18th of September, we also have two multiplier events of the ILSA project that we are part of.
The Interlingual Live Subtitling for Access project, right?
That's right. That's
Can you tell us a bit more about this project, Agnieszka?
Yes, so this project is, as you said, on interlingual live subtitling, which is a bit more difficult. If you thought re-speaking for live subtitles is difficult, then we are adding another layer of the difficulty there, that is doing this between different languages. So it's like interpreting combined with subtitling in real time. And we have a team of experts. The project leader is Dr. Pablo Romero Fresco. I think you talked to on the radio
many times.
He's the boss. He's based now at the University of Vigo. We have a great team from the University of Antwerp, very experienced in that. The University of Vienna with Professor Franz Poschhacker, the interpreting guru. there's us at the University of Warsaw, and we also have partners from the industry, from VRT, Flemish Television, from the Parliament, and other companies that are involved. And what we're doing is we are creating a course that will be available online, free of charge for everyone to use, and the course will be on interlingual live subtitling. It will consist of three main parts, what we call foundational component first, where we'll have materials on accessibility in general, on pre-recorded subtitling, as well as on simultaneous interpreting, which are sort of necessary components to enter the core part, which will be on intralingual re-speaking first, and then on interlingual re-speaking. And finally, we'll also provide some will contextualize the course, because live subtitling takes place in different contexts, for example, on television, as well as live events and education. Yes. So we'll produce different materials, such as video lectures, different exercises, quizzes. We'll have interviews with professionals, video tutorials, different case study films showing live subtitling from different perspectives in different countries, so that as many people as possible could then use the course and become professionals in this newly emerging discipline.
We have just listened to an excerpt from an interview with Agnieszka Szarkowska, who told us more about the roundtable on AVT localization that she chaired at the Media for All International Conference. Agnieszka also gave us a preview, let's say, of the upcoming International Conference on Audiovisual Translation Intermedia, which will be held in Warsaw on the 19th and 20th of September 2019, and will be preceded by workshops on the 18th of September. As Agnieszka said, quality in media accessibility is the main focus of attention of researchers, professionals, but also and especially, as Agnieszka said, users. With our next guest, we will know more about viewer-centered studies that can contribute to our understanding of quality in media accessibility. So, don't move. We will be back soon.
It is estimated that 1 in 6 people have some sort of sensory impairment or disability, which means that 1 in 6 people cannot fully understand your film without subtitles for the deaf or hard of hearing, as well as audio descriptions for the blind or visually impaired. SubT Access generates accessible versions of films and makes media content accessible to a sensory impaired audience. SubT Access, access services for the media. SubT Access, your vision for all. SubT.com.
Accessible Cinema, we are trying to understand all the complexities of an evolving mediascape. And with our next guest, we will try to answer a very complex question. How good is good enough in media accessibility? So let's try to answer this question and let's listen to an excerpt from an interview with Jan-Louis Kruger, head of the Department of Linguistics at Macquarie University in Sydney, Australia, where he also teaches audiovisual translation and media accessibility.
Fred Film Radio.
Speaking of quality, in your inspiring speech as keynote speaker at the Mediaforum conference entitled Towards an Understanding of AVT as Multimodal Mediation, I remember you posed a kind of provocative question: how good is good enough in the age of increasing access? So how good is good enough, in your opinion? What happens to the viewer experience in the age of universal access?
Yes, that's a really tricky question because I addressed in the keynote was the fact that we live in the age of global media and of media in all facets of our lives. There's just so much audiovisual content now that it's, on the one hand, it's impossible to handle that content, the translation of that content, making use only of human subtitles, human audiovisual translators. We have to deal with automation. We have to involve automation to manage the cost of it and also the speed of it. Especially if you think of something like the internet, like YouTube or any of the other video platforms or educational platforms, there's just so much content now that it's virtually impossible to have this done by human translators. But then we also have in recent years the boom of streaming providers like Netflix, not only Netflix but Netflix also, which means that we have video on demand and we have an explosion in terms of content.
Yeah, we can choose our
right. So the user has much more power now in terms of choosing what they want to see, but they can also choose when they want to activate the subtitles. What we see now is that many of these providers involve that make use of crowdsourcing or employ people without training to do the subtitles, to do the captions, and they give them guidelines. But the problem with anything like that, if you work on a scale like they work on, or if you work with something like the semi-automated subtitles that YouTube uses, then there are certain elements of quality that definitely come in.
Mm-hmm.
We have the variability, very much so. And you have one aspect in particular, and that is speed.
Yeah.
The presentation speed of subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue, of course, is a financial issue as much as anything else.
Yeah.
On the one hand, you have users who make use of subtitles who are not necessarily conventional audiences. So it's not necessarily deaf and hard of hearing viewers or viewers who don't understand the soundtrack of the original. It's viewers who can understand the soundtrack, but they make use of the subtitles as support.
Yeah.
And many of these users do not have a lot of experience using subtitles, and as soon as the subtitles differ from what they hear, they are up in arms, and they say the subtitles are terrible.
Are terrible,
even if it's brilliant subtitles, if there's a single word missing, they will complain.
Maybe they are simply different, I mean...
Exactly, yes. Mm-hmm. And also, it's they don't necessarily take into account that that subtitles are not in the first place created for people who have full access to the audio.
No.
They created for people who don't have access to the to the audio because of the loss of hearing,
mm-hmm.
or maybe because of linguistic barriers. They don't understand the language of the soundtrack. So this on the one hand, from the user's perspective, many users demand word for word or verbatim subtitles. But then from the perspective of the television companies or broadcasters
mm-hmm.
or streaming services, for them it makes much more sense to, it's much easier to do verbatim, word for word subtitles,
yeah.
because this can be automated much more easily. On the one hand, because you can use speech to text technology, but on the other hand, if you do verbatim, then there's very little skill involved. It's merely a transcript.
Yeah, a transcript of the original dialogue. Yes.
So there's very little work, and what makes subtitling expensive, of course, is the fact that subtitlers spend a lot of time very carefully reducing the text so that the presentation speed is manageable, so that the viewer has enough time to read the text on screen. This almost often, or almost always, involves a reduction of the volume of the text.
Yeah.
We have to summarize, not summarize, but formulate things in different ways so that you use fewer characters or fewer words, or rephrase things slightly so that you can say the same, convey the same message, the same content, but present it slightly differently.
You mentioned the increasing in the presentation rate of subtitles and also the impact. So not only the increase in the presentation rate, but also the impact of high presentation rates on viewer experience. You presented the findings of a recent experiment in your keynote speech designed to determine the impact of high presentation rates on viewer experience. So on the ability of users to access a subtitled film, since we are talking about media accessibility.
Yes.
Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yes. The study that we designed was designed specifically to look at two things. One was what happens when the presentation rate increases,
mm-hmm.
when viewers have less time available. And we deal with the conventions of characters per second. So we present the speed as characters per second, and then we work from the conventional speed of 12 characters per second, which is linked to the 6-second rule,
mm-hmm.
Which essentially means that if you have two full lines of text with about 37 characters per line, then the viewer needs something like 6 seconds to read that. And if you use that rule, then it's about 12 seconds, 12 characters per second. And this is a convention that's still followed in many parts of the world, in Scandinavia in particular, but in other parts of the world as well. So what we did was we had that 12 characters per second, then we had 20 characters per second, which is quite a bit faster, but is still
manageable.
Yeah, for people with higher reading speed. And then we used a very fast rate of 28 characters per second, just
mm-hmm.
to see what happens when we do this. And we then did this in two conditions. One was with video and one without video.
Oh, okay. So in the present, but also in the absence of video, let's say. Okay.
And that's right, yes. Mm-hmm. So the three speeds in the presence of video and three speeds in the absence mm-hmm. of video. And what we found, interestingly, or not that surprising in many cases, but some of the interesting findings is that, and this the one I think that was that took us by a little bit by surprise was that the comprehension of the viewers was consistently higher in the presence of video. Now that shouldn't be that surprising because there's more context, but you would think that with subtitles, the viewer is effectively blind to what's on screen for a large proportion of the time,
mm-hmm.
because when you read the subtitles, you can't look at the screen as well.
Yeah, of course.
You have to shift your eyes mm-hmm. to look at the screen. So what this means is that that even at the very high speed and especially at the 20 characters per second speed, viewers did significantly better in the comprehension questions afterwards when there was video.
Okay.
At all three conditions, 12, 20, and 28 characters per second, the viewers understood the content better. And the questions we asked were related to the content of the subtitles, not the image. So it says that they could get that context.
Yeah.
But we also saw that the comprehension in all three conditions, the comprehension got progressively worse as the speed increased. So higher speed does result in lower comprehension. Now, the other interesting thing that we found was that you see very specific things, like if the speed increases, people start reading faster. So if there's less time available to read the subtitle, they will start compensating and reading faster.
To keep up with the speed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Because they will notice after a couple of subtitles that if they read at their normal speed, they won't be able to read everything,
so they start reading faster. That makes sense, yes.
But what also happens then is that they start processing the text more superficially. We see that the fixations, that the time that the eye, when we read, our eyes make use of fixations to extract information, and then we have what we call saccades, that are the fast movements your eyes make to move from one point of fixation to the next point.
Mm-hmm.
So in normal reading, we expect that a viewer will skip about one third of words will be skipped, or a certain percentage of words will be skipped. But what we see when the speed increases is that skipping rate increases. So the saccades are longer, viewers make fewer fixations, these fixations are shorter, and there's a bigger gap between the fixations, which means that they start skipping more and more words.
Mm-hmm.
We also see that they can't complete the reading of a particular subtitle when the speed increases. So, and what was interesting there was that the difference between the reading of subtitles at the slow speed, at 12 characters per second, when viewers read subtitles with video and without video, there's a very big difference on all of the measures that we use, all the eye tracking measures. The many more fixations, longer fixations without video. But then as the speed increases, these differences start to disappear. In other words, viewers start reading the subtitles the same whether there's video or not when the speed increases to a high rate.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
So what this basically tells us is that at that speed, at the highest speed, people start ignoring the visuals and spending all of their time reading the subtitles.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
So they no longer have time to process the image because they have to spend all their time reading the subtitles, otherwise they won't be able to finish reading it. So this is compelling evidence to show that even if viewers can keep up with higher presentation rates, the way that they can then process the text is impacted negatively.
I mean, even if they can keep up with fast subtitles, this does not mean that they understand and maybe also enjoy, I don't know, the film or the TV series.
Oh, yes. No, it would definitely impact on enjoyment as well. It would impact on the cognitive effort that they use to process the subtitles. And we know that viewers often complain about subtitles being very demanding. They don't like seeing movies with subtitles because it's demanding.
Yeah.
It tires them out. They can't do it for a long time because you get tired of reading. So when the speed increases, these measures will increase, or that effect will increase. And in particular, people will start reading more superficially and also not have time to look at the images as much while they're reading the subtitles.
We have just listened to an excerpt from an interview with Jan-Louis Kruger, one of the keynote speakers, together with our previous guest, Agnieszka Sierkowska, at the Media for All International Conference. As Jan-Louis said, the skills required to create audiovisual translation have come within reach of a large group of practitioners due to the advances in editing software and technology. As for training opportunities for audiovisual translators and media accessibility experts, our next guest will present a European project that aims to define the skills of the professionals involved in creating easy-to-understand content. If you want to know more about this, well, stay with us. We will be right back.
Fred.
This is Natasha Sinjanovic for Fred Film Radio.
Fred Film Radio, z vami sam Bor Pruteršek.
Fred Film Radio, sono Angela Prudenzi.
Essa è Fred Film Radio, io chiamo Mariani Morissal, do Festival di Berlino.
Angela Cerbi per Fred Film Radio, on è al Festival di Venice.
Fred, the festival experience in 23 languages.
Accessible Cinema, we are exploring the many ways in which the media accessibility field is changing and evolving. At the Media for All conference, it was clear that diverse groups of inhabitants of our audiovisual world are demanding and getting their just rights as audiovisual citizens. For instance, content can be made easier to understand by using easy-to-read language. And our next guest, Anna Matamala, senior lecturer at the Department of Translation and Interpreting at the Universidad Autónoma de Barcelona, member of Transmedia Research Group and Transmedia Catalonia, interviewed by Annalisa Sandrelli, will present the European project Easy Access for Social Inclusion Training. So, to know more about this, let's listen to an excerpt from an interview with Anna Matamala. This, but also our previous interviews, are also available on Fred's website.
Fred Film Radio.
So, first of all, could you tell us what EASIT is?
Yeah, well, EASIT is a three-year project, an Erasmus Plus project. EASIT stands for Easy Access for Social Inclusion Training. And basically, we want to research whether easy-to-read language, plain language, so all these methods to make language easier to understand by diverse audiences, if we could merge them with the audiovisual content. So could we maybe make subtitles easier to read? Could we maybe make audio descriptions easier to read? And as a special case study, could we make audiovisual content such as news easier to understand? So that's the whole point of EASIT.
Okay. And you mentioned the concept of diverse audiences. So mm-hmm. who is the project directed to? Who are you thinking of especially?
Well, the actual services that could be produced in the end, I think could benefit a wide audience. So we're not thinking, you know, about people with visual impairments only or people with hearing impairments. We're thinking about all sorts of users, persons with cognitive impairments, but not only. So mm-hmm. I think this can benefit many audiences who want to enjoy the visuals and have a simpler version of these access services.
Okay. Well, it sounds interesting, but also huge. So I presume yes. you're not alone in this effort.
No, we are a team of universities, mm-hmm. of NGOs, associations, mm-hmm. and also a broadcaster. Because I should be saying that although our interest is in merging these services, this is a training project. Mm-hmm. This is an educational project. So the ultimate aim is to define the profile of these new media access experts mm-hmm. and provide training materials. So unfortunately, we will not be, you know, doing extensive research of this merging, but it will be more discussing how this new profile could be defined and trained.
So what are the main stages of the project and where are you at the moment?
Well, to start with, first of all, we did a survey. We got 128 replies mm-hmm. from all over Europe mm-hmm. and we wanted to know more about easy-to-read language, about plain language, clear communication, all these simplification methods, mm-hmm. what the status is in terms of practice and training. This is done. You've got the report available on the website. You're welcome to read that.
Okay, great.
And then the second stage was actually doing focus groups and interviews with audio describers, with subtitlers, with audiovisual, you know, news, audiovisual news experts, propose them this innovative idea mm-hmm. and get their views on whether this could be done or not, how this could be done. And again, we've produced a report. It's available again. Okay. Now we are on stage three, which is defining the skills card. In the end, we've come up that we want to define the skills for an expert in easy-to-read subtitles, an expert on easy-to-read audio descriptions, and easy-to-understand, sorry, and an expert on easy-to-understand audiovisual content. So we're defining the skills, what they should know. And also think, okay, if I'm already a subtitler, what skills should I add mm-hmm. to my profile?
So on the basis of this, then you're going to build the training materials.
Exactly. Well, the next step will be to design a curriculum. So, you know, the modules or the content that could be included there, hopefully with a very flexible, you know, with a very flexible approach. And based on this, we'll be creating training materials, educational materials, which will be free, will be open access, mm-hmm. and yeah, for anybody to use.
That sounds great. So for anybody who wants to find out more about the project and wants to download the report, perhaps because this is radio, we should spell EASIT so they know what to enter on
exactly.
Google.
So it's EASIT. IT.
Okay.
You search for that and you'll land hopefully on the EASIT webpage. We also have a Twitter account, EASIT Project. We are on Facebook, EASIT Project again. And we've got a stakeholders list. So if anyone is interested, just contact me and I will include you on a mailing list in which we don't spam, we just send a few very relevant emails.
Well, thank you very much. It's been very helpful. It's been very interesting and a pleasure to speak to you. So to all our listeners, if you're interested in Project EASIT, please find out. Go on Google, on Twitter, on Facebook, follow or send Anna an email.
Please.
And I'm sure you'll receive all the news and all the updates about the project.
We have just listened to an excerpt from an interview with Anna Matamala by Annalisa Sandrelli, who presented the European project Easy Access for Social Inclusion Training. As Anna said, this project will propose a modular curriculum design to train experts involved in creating easy-to-understand content and will develop flexible, multilingual, open educational resources.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt McCucci from the 64th Berlin International Film Festival.
Io sono Valentina Pompili al Tokyo International Film Festival.
Soy Antonio Becker y estoy aquí con...
Internationalen Filmfestspielen in Berlin. Mein Name ist Beatrice Behn.
Herren Begumfi, Fred Film Radio.
Fred, the festival experience in 23 languages.
If you want to keep track of what is going on in the field of media accessibility, but you couldn't attend the Media for All conference, you can visit MAP's website, the Media Accessibility Platform, where you can also listen to our next episode of Accessible Cinema. And don't miss the upcoming Intermedia Conference 2019, which will be held in Warsaw on the 19th and 20th of September 2019, and will be preceded by workshops on the 18th of September. Of course, don't miss our next episode of Accessible Cinema. Bye for now. This is Francesca Raffi and this is Fred Accessible Cinema on Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio.
Fred Film Radio presents Accessible Cinema, a program about media accessibility, sponsored by SubT Access, subtitling and audio description services for cinema, television, theatre performances and other live events. Accessible Cinema.
Fred Film Radio.
24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.